Last week, I spent all day Tuesday at the Hampton Convention Center. That's where the Hampton Roads Youth Career Expo was taking place. And I was one of almost 100 volunteers who had come there for the day to interview high school seniors and a few juniors and do mock interviews with them. And so by the busloads, these high school students came from Yorktown and from Pocosin and Hampton and Newport News. And they were great. They were really, really wonderful. They were full of energy and hope. They were bright and friendly. And they gave me hope for the future. Being with those youth reminded me of my first jobs, my summer jobs, babysitting, transcribing, typing, waitressing at the Ponderosa restaurant, one job being a night auditor at a hotel, dining room supervisor at the Iron City Fishing Club up in the Georgian Bay. I was a door-to-door saleswoman for a while and a Pizza Hut delivery girl. Each of these jobs taught me something about the world and my place in it. Each job was a stepping stone, not to bigger and better, but a stepping stone to my deeper understanding about what work meant in the world. Work, vocation, call. The more I worked, the more I wanted to align my everyday job to my job on the planet, my greater purpose in life. As each of these teenagers rose to shake my hand, I would say goodbye to them and say a little silent prayer that they would each find their purpose, their true calling in life, that they could find meaningful work that would line up with their true selves. But, you know, at the same time that I was praying for them, I also knew the cold, hard facts. And the cold, hard facts is that the unemployment rate for young folks is almost 23%. And so the chances of them finding a job, any job, let alone one that is meaningful, is depressingly low. Still, I hope they don't give up their search for work that is real, for work where they won't have to sacrifice their true being in order to make a living. No matter what kind of work we're talking about, volunteer work, paid work, work in nonprofit, work in the corporate world, people seem to want a few basic things out of their work life. They want a sense of autonomy and freedom so they don't feel like robots just going through the motions. They want to feel challenged and feel like what they're doing really matters to somebody somewhere. And they want to be rewarded for their efforts. Now, the reward doesn't have to be money. Actually, money isn't the big motivator. We're motivated by lots and lots of things, and it doesn't have to be money. When work is meaningful and mindfully aligned with our inner selves, we sometimes call that right livelihood. Has anybody ever heard that phrase, right livelihood? Okay. It's a phrase that comes out of the Buddhist tradition, Buddhism's Eightfold Path, which is a set of practices that can help to free us from suffering. For a practicing Buddhist, right livelihood is connected to their vows to not steal, not kill, not lie, to refrain from engaging in sexual misconduct, and refrain from taking in any intoxicants. And so a Buddhist will refrain from work in a casino, or in the military, or in a butcher shop, or a wine store. It's very clear for them what right work is and what wrong work is. Now, apart from the Buddhist teachings, that general idea that we should all strive to make a living through rightful means is shared by most faiths, isn't it? Being honest and ethical in our business dealings, not to cheat or steal or lie in order to make a living, that can be found in most of the wisdom throughout the ages Even though the term right livelihood is rooted in Buddhism, the concept has now seeped into general Western culture. In the process, the idea of right livelihood has expanded beyond the original meaning of doing no harm. And the expanded idea of right livelihood is prompting many people to reevaluate how they're making a living and trying to find new ways to do work in a world that makes a difference. People want to work in a way that contributes to their communities, in a way that brings a sense of personal fulfillment while paying the bills. One thing that surprised me in my interviews with the high school youth is that out of the 30 or so interviews that I did, I don't remember one of them saying, "I want to go out there and make lots of money." Okay, maybe they were coached well by their teachers. But they seem to talk about work that really matters, that brings them joy, working in things that they like to do and something that would contribute to the society. So there's one story that really exemplifies this westernization of right livelihood, and it comes from Steve Jobs, who passed away last fall. In 1983, Steve Jobs was trying to get John Sculley to come work for Apple. Now, does anybody know who John Sculley is? Yeah, he's the CEO. He was the president of Pepsi. And that's a really good job, you know, and so Steve Jobs had to do a pretty good sales pitch to try to get him to move away. And so he tried to appeal to John Sculley's sense of right livelihood by kind of shouting at him, saying, "Look, John, do you want to spend the rest of your life selling sugar water, or do you want to come with me and change the world?" Well, given that choice, right? Who wouldn't want to save the world? Who doesn't want work that is real, that serves other people and satisfies our very souls? I think people want to live as authentically as possible, living out of a sense of higher purpose. But in the real life world, where we're not CEOs, the choices that regular people have are fairly limited, especially these days. How many people do you know have to make difficult choices between their moral values and the jobs that provide shelter and food for their families? How many of us have worked or are working in jobs that just kill our spirit, and yet we drag ourselves to work because we have to? Now, if you are that practicing Buddhist who follows the Eightfold Path and has taken the five precepts, you get a lot of guidance about what right livelihood is. But for the average American, working in today's complicated 21st century global economy, it's not always easy to know what right livelihood means. And so making a list of right careers, right jobs, and wrong jobs is really not useful. It's not helpful. To ask the question like, is it wrong to be a banker? Is it wrong to be a CEO? Is it wrong to be a soldier? These are questions that aren't going to help move the conversation along. It's not going to help us to develop our deeper understanding of what right livelihood could mean. And so instead, I invite you to ask other questions like, am I aware of my motivations? Am I aware of what moves me to ambition? Do I feel a hunger in my soul that my job feeds? Do I understand the nature of that hunger? Do I feel connected to the earth and the natural cycles of life? Do I feel separate and disconnected from people who aren't just like me. In today's world, right livelihood is not simply a matter of individual morality. It is also a matter of social responsibility, a social responsibility to do no harm and to ensure that there is meaningful work for people to do. Over 12 million people in this country are out of work right now. 12 million people who want to work desperately, but who can't find a job. And there are countless others who are underemployed and working in soul-deadening jobs. When I think about those young people and the unemployment rate that they're facing, I have to think about our collective responsibility. For these folks and their families, there is great harm being done to them by our economic system that keeps rewarding greed and selfishness, quick profit over sustainability and cooperation. I mentioned to you last week that we often think of our present economic system as just a fact of life, as if greed and selfishness were a given, that there's nothing we can do about it. That's just the way things are. But the rules that govern our economy are not rules of nature. These are rules that people invented. We made the rules. We and our representatives passed the laws, and we can change them so that the economy serves us and does the least amount of harm. In a recent article I read by a law professor named Jedediah Purdy, he talks about the morality of individuals versus the morality of institutions. He says that when we talk about our economy, we are most accustomed and most comfortable talking in terms of individual morality, individual virtue or vice, you know, hardworking people or lazy people. But we haven't learned how to talk about the morality of the entire economy. And we know this to be true, right? Because we're always talking about individual responsibility and individual power to make decisions. Making authentic decisions at the individual level is important. And while I do believe in the power of small, consistent action, these times that we're living in right now, this is an important time. These times call for collective action. Now, you and I are part of a spiritual community that has a purpose, a greater purpose for being together. We're not just a collection of individual, well-meaning people who like to just hang out with each other and have potlucks. We have a collective power that is far greater than we have ever exercised before. We have a collective power that is greater than we have ever imagined. Do you remember President Obama during his election 4 years ago referring to the words of the Unitarian minister Theodore Parker and Martin Luther King Jr. when he said that the arc of the moral universe is long and it bends toward justice, but it doesn't automatically bend toward justice. The only reason that it does so is because we put our hands on it and we push, and we have to push together. As we contemplate what our individual job on the planet might be, this spiritual community is also called to ask the same question. What is our job on the planet? I believe our job is to push on that arc to make sure it bends toward justice. Jedediah Purdy poses five questions that I think are helpful to get the conversation started among people who are serious about transforming our economy. First, in a moral economy, we have to ask this question: what do we all think that people should get just by being members of the community? Healthcare? Education? assistance when we're out of work, security in old age, protection on the job, access to food and shelter? What are those basic things that everyone, every single person in our community should have access to? Second, what kind of work should be rewarded? Are there ways of earning a living that should be discouraged? Should the system reward work that serves the greater good rather than individual wealth? Third, how much do we all care about income disparity, income equality? Is it okay in a moral economy to have great accumulations of wealth while others live in poverty? Fourth, how important is economic security? For a person who works 30 years in the same job, do we want to make sure that person retires securely? And do we know what the cost is on the other side? Are we willing to pay the price for that security, which is sometimes the loss of a dynamic and robust marketplace? And fifth, how much do we want small and local versus big and cheap? So as we individually and collectively wrestle with these questions that have no easy answers, let us all remember the underlying spiritual truth that grounds us and holds us. Let us remember that no matter how disconnected we may feel sometimes from the privileged or the underprivileged, from the earth, from the rest of the human family, the truth is that we are not separate. We are not separate. Every day we're bombarded by these messages from our culture, from our society, that this is, the world is a you or me kind of place. It's not true. We will not survive unless we can see that the world is all about you and me. You and me and you and me. If we can remember that everyone and everything is interweaving in this mysterious fabric that we call life, then we can indeed have a moral economy. We can all engage in right livelihood, no matter what our job on the planet. May it be so.